All right, the Wednesday afternoon ritual begins, and Dr. Kimberly Earle has made her way in to have a chat about pets and all things animal-related today. Kimberly, g'day.
G'day, how are you?
I'm fantastic, and I'm sure, I know there'll be a million and one callers, but there are a couple of topics we may squeeze through also if we have time.
Yeah, well, I was going to talk about human medications and supplements and the potential pitfalls and dangers for your pets.
Oh, okay, that's a good one. We'll get into that for you shortly. Who has brought in a very interesting topic today, Kimberly. Human medications for our pets, and I'm guessing oils ain't oils here.
Yeah, so this came up in my practice earlier in the week today, or in the early in the week, when we had a client mention that, she was using a supplement that she had gotten online or she'd seen online. She'd gotten a supplement and she was using it for herself and had started to give it to her little dog. And we have real concerns about this because, unfortunately, just because something is safe for humans certainly doesn't mean it's safe for dogs. The prime example of this being chocolate, you know. Humans, great. Chocolate's fantastic. It can even, you know, offer some health benefits if it's dark chocolate. But a very small amount of dark chocolate can put a dog into a situation where their life might be in danger. And so just because something is suitable for humans doesn't mean that it's okay for dogs. And we see this all the time. We see people who are using supplements. In Australia, unfortunately, because a drug or a product that is not registered as a drug, as a pharmaceutical, has very low levels of regulation, and that includes pet products and human products. And so they don't necessarily have to follow all the guidelines in terms of listing all the ingredients in it, things like that, or at least they might list the ingredients but not what the levels are. And we see lots of problems with people, animals getting into things that they shouldn't, or people giving them to, you know, they say, oh, well, I can take this. I'll give my dog this fish oil capsule, or I'll give my dog this supplement, this arthritis supplement that has glucosamine or it has turmeric in it. But unfortunately, sometimes it's not the active ingredient that's the problem. It's the other things that are in it. So the key example that we have is that there are lots of melatonin products on the market that have xylitol in them. Some of the gummies that are for arthritis support, turmeric or things like that, they will have xylitol in them as a sweetener. And xylitol is highly toxic to dogs. It will cause liver failure. It will cause seizures really early on, where, you know, a small dog, you know, a 5 kilo, you know, white fluffy thing might only have one or two gummies. And that potentially is enough to cause them problems. And these won't necessarily show up within 30 or 40 minutes. It might take 4 to 6 hours before the signs make themselves known. So we would always counsel people to be really, really cautious about what you give your dogs and then also what your dog gets access to accidentally.
And, of course, proportionality as well. I mean, yeah. Because, I mean, something that is fine for a human, big human like us, but something is toxic to a dog and you've got a little handbag dog.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it's going to go down quickly. And again, all of these products are not going to have, I'm assuming, on the packet, you know, don't feed pets, because
right.
It's a human product. So the concept is, why would we be doing that to begin with?
Yep, that's right. And there are different ways to label some of these things. So some artificial sweeteners, which will be xylitol in their makeup, they may not be labeled as xylitol on the packet. They may, you know, be labeled as natural sweeteners that sort of thing. So that's really tricky. And then we have, you know, people who sort of go, oh, my dog's been injured, you know, they're limping. I might just give them a product, you know, something I've got at home. And so they pop open a package of ibuprofen and pop the dog a package of ibuprofen. Well, unfortunately, ibuprofen is really toxic to dogs. It can cause severe stomach ulceration. It can cause renal disease, kidney failure. And, you know, a simple packet of Nurofen, you know, depending on the size of your dog, can cause a fatal overdose of that, you know, non-nesteroidal anti-inflammatory in their system. We do use some human medications in dogs. So this is not necessarily across the board, but we would always counsel you to do that only under the specific recommendations of your veterinarian, and don't play with fire. Cats are another thing. So cats, the phrase that we always use in the veterinary industry is that cats are not small dogs. And so just because you have a dose of something that a vet has prescribed for your small dog does not mean it's safe for your cat. And the example that we use with that is paracetamol. So we do have doses of paracetamol that we use in dogs, and it can be quite an effective pain reliever for them under veterinary guidance. But even a tiny morsel of paracetamol will kill a cat. Absolutely, there's no safe level. Not even a fraction of a tablet is safe for use in a cat. So it's really, really important that you, you know, don't try try this at home. Like, don't try it at home without speaking to a veterinarian. Really, really important.
See, that's tricky. Not that I would have thought about giving my cat a Panadol, but but the concept is, if you do, even a half a one, point of a one, it's bye-bye kitty.
Yeah, it's and sometimes it's not, you can't stop it. You know, some of these toxicities we can reverse, or we may have an antidote to certain things. We may be able to support them through it if we get to them early. But certain things like Panadol is one of the ones that for cats, it's virtually impossible. If they've gotten it, it's virtually impossible to turn it around. Ethylene glycol, antifreeze, or, you know, there's products that you put in your car. Mm. Maybe a little bit less of a problem in Australia than it used to be in Canada when I was there. Everybody, you know, in winter, we always had to put antifreeze in our cars. A dog only has to have, you know, a couple laps up of an antifreeze product, and they're pretty well not savable unless they get, you know, really, really specialized care within a very short period of time. So what do you do if you come home? Because this is really common, right? Come home from work and the dog has gotten restless in the house and he's, you know, jumped up onto the table and found a box of ibuprofen, something there, some Nurofen. What do you do? Well, if it's within business hours, absolutely call your local vet. If it's not within business hours, we are fortunate enough to have a 24-hour emergency center here in Newcastle. Call them, get your dog in straight away. Because quite often, if we can make them vomit, we can't make them vomit for every product, but quite often we can. And that is going to make a significant difference to how sick your pet gets or what kind of treatment they're going to require or what their prognosis is. But if you're somewhere where you can't, you know, you can't get there, you for whatever reason, you can't get into the emergency center, there is a pet poisons helpline that you can call in Australia. I was just trying to find the actual number, but it fails me at the moment. But I'll get that. But you can call the pet poisons helpline and say, hey, I've just come home. I've got this dog. It's 12 kilos. And they've gotten into a box of, you know, ibuprofen or naproxen or, you know, antidepressant medications are often really common in the home, ADHD medications. You can call and say, this is what my dog has gotten into, and is this something that I should be really concerned about? And that can go for all sorts of, you know, household products and chemicals, not just necessarily medicines and pharmaceuticals. Even sometimes, you know, foods that we would eat, again, dogs, chocolate, it's pretty easy to find information about chocolate toxicity in dogs. But, you know, there's other products. I've even had, you know, owners come home and their dogs have gotten into, they've raided the garbage and they've gotten into whatever pantry was cleaned out and there's garlic sauce or something like that in the, you know, in the rubbish. And that can be really dangerous as well.
And so for the animals, it's like, well, this is, they don't see it as garbage. They see it as
something smells really good.
Dessert.
Something smells really good.
Super quick before we move on from this one, Kimberly, what got us into this was the fact that there was a casual chat that happened in the surgery. Are we seeing a lot more of people just doing this? And we have retroactive, do we have to fix it?
And you know, with a social media, there's all sorts of advertising there, right? Every time I scroll down on Facebook or something like that, there's ads for this product and that product. Some of them are for me. Some of them are for my dog or my cat. We just have to really remember that the industry is very unregulated in Australia. If it's not an actual medication, pharmaceutical, it doesn't have to go through a lot of regulatory anything. And so even some of those products that are legitimately, you know, produced for dogs and cats by people who I'm sure think they're doing the right thing, some of them are really dangerous. It used to be, we used to see a lot of tea tree oil products around for dogs.
That's
people
true,
are going,
yeah.
You know, oh, put the tea tree oil down their ears or put it on their skin. Well, tea tree, it turns out, if your dog licks it, is actually quite toxic to them. And, you know, and dogs lick them because, like, tea tree also stings. So
be careful what comes up on your phone.
So, you know, check with your vet.
Your phone does listen to you. You should see the sort of ads I get in my feed. Animal Poisons Helpline number in a minute, in case you want to jot that down. As Pet Chat rolls on at 2NURFM 103.7. We mentioned we'd throw the Animal Poison Helpline number your way, so here it comes. It's a 1-300-869-738. Kimberly, we're starting to get that warmer weather, which is kind of nice, but that does bring a whole suite of problems for our pets in the backyard.
Absolutely. Guess what we've seen this week?
Already.
Our first tick case already this week.
Wow, yep. This?
So here's the things. It's been a really, really wet year. Mm. Ticks love wet weather. It's going to be a bad tick year. We absolutely 100% know that. We've already seen our first case of tick paralysis in the clinic, and we don't see that many, like, in our area. I mean, I'm in Newcastle, but, like, our clinic doesn't see huge numbers of them. But the emergency centers, the Central Coast to Central Coast Vet Hospitals and the places closer in Merriweather and stuff like that, they're already seeing cases in high numbers. These days, there's just about no excuse to have a paralysis tick case because the preventatives that we have are really, really good. They're very safe. They're really, really effective. There's even a prescription medication now. So it is prescription, but it's an injection that lasts for 12 months against fleas and ticks in Australia. Go and speak to your vet about it. It's fantastic. It's expensive, but it's not that expensive. If you look at it, it gives you 12 months prevention. So it's going to cost, depending on the size of your dog, the same or, and individual clinics will be pricing it a little bit differently, but it's still going to be good value for money considering that, you know, if your dog gets a tick paralysis or paralysis tick, you know, costs to treat it are going to be upwards of $3,000 to $10,000 in a basic case, not even in a complex case. So it's really, really, you know, important that your dog is, and your cat, is on some tick prevention.
Assuming that somebody's got their animals at home and for what reason they're not protected, what are the things that we're looking out for?
So the most common thing that we frequently see would be a little bit of wobbliness in the back legs or an animal who's But, I mean, that's often, they often sort of go, oh, he's got a little bit wobbly in the back legs. Sometimes people complain that the dog's bark has changed, that they're breathing a little bit. If your dog is panting and they haven't been doing any exercise and their breathing's a little bit noisy, that's often a really, you know, big clue. Weakness, you know, the dog just, you know, tried to get up and like wobbled a bit on the back legs and hasn't been out and doing anything. It's not an old arthritic dog, even if it is an old arthritic dog. And lots of people tell me, well, my dog doesn't go anywhere. He only stays in, you know, in the backyard. It should be fine. Well, unfortunately, ticks do go places. Your dog doesn't have to go anywhere. Ticks will come in on possums. They will come in on birds. They will come in on reptiles. They actually will blow in on the wind. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but ticks have this, they've been shown that if you take a broom handle or broom pole, sorry, and you put a tick on it, they will climb up something like 27 crossovers. You know, if you like take the broom and you sort of put a standard end on end, 27 times they will climb up. And that's because they climb up into trees and they literally jump off in the wind so that they can, you know, they're looking for a meal. So they will come into your yard without your pet getting anywhere. Last year we had ticks on cats that had not left their house. They are indoor-only cats, and they're still managing to get ticks. So just because you have an indoor-only cat doesn't go into the yard doesn't mean you shouldn't have them protected.
No, because like you said, the ticks, they've got their passport stamped. They're travellers.
Absolutely. They're travellers, big time. Yeah,
that's crazy. Would they be the area on your animal's body where the tick has taken home, would that be a source of irritation so the animal would be going to that, or are they just harder
not
to spot?
Always, no. Like, they don't seem to cause a lot of irritation to the animals as a general rule. Cats are pretty, you know, finicky groomers, right? And so if a cat finds a tick on their rump, their tail, that sort of thing, they are likely to try to get it off. But we know that 80% of ticks are found on the front, you know, third of the body. So that's around the ears and around the head, the neck, in the armpit areas, those sorts of things. And those are hard areas for animals to groom themselves. They can't, you know, groom other than getting a foot up and scratching it. And that's not going to, a tick that's well attached, you can put your foot up and scratch it if your cat. That is not going to dislodge that tick. So I don't know if you've ever had a tick on you know, your own body. They're really, really hard to get out. So humans will find it and like be like, oh goodness, what's this little scab or something like that? And then work out that actually it's something embedded in the skin. And you don't feel them get on there. So you know, they don't tend to make much notice of themselves.
They just turn up and, oh no, I'm here now.
So they have to be on for a few days. So important, even, you know, with the really great preventatives that we have, we would always recommend, particularly if you have a long or medium coated pet, to be tick searching them every day. Focus on those areas that are have little nooks and crannies and things like that. But you'd be surprised how many times we get an animal that comes in with tick paralysis and we find the tick on its face. And it sometimes is not till the second or third person because they can get into the folds around the nose. They can get into the folds around the lips, around the ears. They can be really, really hard to see and to spot. And they take time. When they attach, they're teeny, teeny, tiny little seed ticks. By the time they've been there for 48 hours or 72 hours, they're getting, you know, starting to get a lot bigger, and then they become much easier to see. But that's, you know, by that point, they've also started to put lethal amounts of toxin into your pet. So it's really important.
All right. Tick season is going to be a bad one, and it has already started. In the meanwhile, Kimberly, we'd love for somebody to expand their family, and what better way to do that with our cat of the week? And isn't he a gorgeous thing today?
He is lovely. This week we have Lucifer. He is a five-year-old all-over black cat, but he's got this little tuft of white on his chest. He's very pretty. It says he's a sweet boy. He loves the simple things in life. He loves to have a comfy bed, some good food, and his foster sister, Nala. They've lived together since he was a kitten, and they have formed the best bond. So they're not actually saying that the two cats have to go together, but they are suggesting that they would be best suited if you could take on two nice young cats. Says that he is cat-friendly, he is child-friendly. Something about that he actually was surrendered because he wanted to sleep with the newborn baby in the house, and that obviously got everybody's nerves up a little bit.
Maybe not.
He's good with dogs shy with dogs, but a slow and patient introduction would probably be best. So he's five. Nice young cat, has plenty of good years left to go. He's a black cat, and I was just saying that, you know, black cats tend to be fairly even-tempered. They tend to be pretty, you know, easygoing, chilled, friendly cats. I really like black cats, so I grew up with black cats.
And they're not bad luck.
No, I don't think so.
All right, you can check out our Pet of the Week. Yep. Little gorgeous cat there at our website at 2NURFM.com.au with Dr. Kimberly Earle, who started a conversation you did earlier, Kimberly, with ticks. They're sort of on the rise. But coming into that warmer part of the year, we're also going to see something else which could be a problem for our bunny rabbits.
Yeah, so we've just had a really, really wet autumn and winter, and now the warm weather is coming, and that means the mosquitoes are coming out as well. And so this is a public service announcement for all of you people who have rabbits as pets, beautiful little bunnies, is that we are going to see a real uptick in myxomatosis and Khaleesi virus. Now, unfortunately, in Australia, we have no available vaccine against myxomatosis, so the only thing you can do to prevent that is to help your rabbits stay mosquito-free. So, you know, if they're outside, make sure they're in a enclosure that is mosquito-proofed with, you know, mosquito meshing and things like that. But also, Khaleesi virus can also be carried by mosquitoes, but also other, you know, insects, and even just contact, you know, direct viral contact. And there is vaccines available for that. There is a vaccine available for that. If you have a pet rabbit, we've already seen through winter quite a few cases this year of Khaleesi virus. And unfortunately, Khaleesi virus, we often don't even get an opportunity to try to treat these guys. They often die before we get to them, or they come in so sick that they die shortly thereafter. It's really common. I know people sort of think, oh, well, like, how common is this sort of thing? But it's actually really, really common. And so get your rabbits vaccinated. It's a great new vaccine. We've had it on the market in Australia for maybe 2.5 years now. It's a single vaccine for rabbits over 12 weeks of age that a single vaccine will give them 12 months protection. So we do recommend annual boosters, which we would always recommend an annual health check for your vet rabbit, if not a 6-monthly check, because lots can happen in 6 months if you're a little rabbit. And get them vaccinated. It's really, really important. Use mosquito proofing. You know, if you're putting your rabbit out on the lawn, they're a house rabbit, but you want to give them time outside, you know, avoid the parts of the day where the mosquitoes are heavy. And I haven't seen a lot of mosquitoes in my backyard just yet, but I'm sure in the next week or so with this beautiful warm weather, it will come.
I feel last season there weren't many around at all, but this year will definitely be a different picture. I mean, there's still, from all of the flooding and heavy rain, there's still lots of water pooling in parts of the Hunter. And you look at that and you think, oh, that's like Mosquitoville ready to go, ready to burst.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. So just be on guard, be proactive about, you know, protecting your pets.
Yeah, it's a tough life being bugs, isn't it? Like being Bugs Bunny, they've got all sorts of things coming their way.
They do, yeah. Rabbits are, I love rabbits, but they're one of those things we always say, if you're a rabbit or a guinea pig, it's all good while it's good. But as soon as it's not good, it's pretty tricky.
Downhill pretty quick.
So, protect your bunnies.
And we're wrapping up with Pet Chat this afternoon on 2NURFM with Dr. Kimberly Earle. You did get to cover a lot of ground today, which is pretty good.
Yes, I had to hear my own voice all afternoon, but that's okay.
All of the summer stuff, watch out for the ticks, the fleas, the mosquitoes.
Yep.
So lots happening there. Of course, you can check out our Pet of the Week, our lovely black cat for you as well.
Lucifer.
Kimberly, yep. Kimberly, we'll catch you next time. Have yourself a great rest of the week.
Thank you. I'll see you in a few weeks.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.